Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
What a beautiful throw by the Baker!
Victor! Hasta la vista, baby! Touchdown!
Welcome into your Victory Monday version of the OBR Film Breakdown Podcast. We're putting this thing out early again, so it might be your Victory Sunday for some of you listening. Nonetheless, it's a Victory post-game edition. I am pleased to be joined by good friend, OBR colleague, Mr. Browns Mock Draft, Stephen Thomas. How are you, sir?
I'm 2-1. How are you, Jake?
Hey, man, we're 2-1. We're 2-1, and I call this, listen, I used to play small college football. I played at a place called Muskingum. We were okay, but there was a team in the conference called Mount Union, and they were above and beyond anything that we put on the field. And they used to just put up these silly stat games like this against not just us, but other teams. So we played them respectively sometimes. But my first 2 years, they put up these ridiculous numbers. And that's what we have here. We call this a stat game for the Cleveland Browns, Steve. Let's go through and talk about the lopsided numbers in this game. Are you ready?
Let's.
26 first downs for your Cleveland Browns, 6 by Chicago. Wow. That's ridiculous. Third downs, 1 of 11 for Chicago, 8 of 17 for Cleveland. They rectified that in the fourth quarter. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Here's where it gets real sideways. 418 total Cleveland Browns yards to just 47 net yards from the Chicago Bears. Wow.
Offensive plays. And that's on 42 plays.
Yes, 42 plays. You do the math, folks. It's a little over a yard a play. I'm not great at it, but that's crazy. 78 plays for your Browns, 42 for your Chicago Bears. 1.1 yard average gain for the Chicago Bears, 5.4 for the Browns. Net rushing yards, Cleveland ends up after a really tough rushing start, aided by 31 rushing yards from Baker Mayfield, 215 net rushing yards, 203 passing yards for the Browns. Although Baker went for 246 on 19 of 31 and a touchdown, the Browns had their own protection issues. I think they gave up 5 sacks. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong on that. But those pushed the net passing yards down to 203. Penalties, the Browns, again, this is where I'm encouraged, Steve. I didn't think they played that great offensively, and I thought they had some undisciplined penalties that cost them 7 penalties for 98 yards for the Browns. That's where the Bears got them. They only had 5 for 44.
Yeah, but if you think about it, the one ticky-tack one that I still don't believe was a penalty, 48 of those yards were the pass interference penalty on John Johnson. So in reality, I mean, of course, you know, you got to count them all. I get it. But I will go to my grave thinking that was not a penalty. So really 6 for 50. Now, you don't like 6 penalties, but it's not a terrible number. Anytime you finish an NFL game with anywhere from 3 to 6. That's about average, right? I mean, you average 4.5 penalties a game, I think, across the league, something like that. I could be off a little bit on that. So 6 is a little more than you would like, but it wasn't like like the opener against Tennessee 2 years ago where they had, 47 penalties or something like that. So it wasn't a terrible day in the penalty department.
That was an all-time terrible penalty game. 0 turnovers for either team. So despite Cleveland doing all they did, they didn't get a turnover. John Johnson got ripped off. I thought that was... Again, he extended a little bit, but that never gets called. But, you know, whatever, it doesn't happen and doesn't turn into an interception. So 0 turnovers for either team, which it was good for the Browns to go a game with 0 turnovers. They were due for one of those. 7 punts for the Chicago Bears, only 2 for Cleveland. 2 touchdowns for Cleveland, 4 for 4 field goals. We're going to talk about that right now. Chase McLaughlin, man, I have some stats to read to you, Steve, and I want to get your reaction to these stats. I threw them out in the Twitch post game. Chase McLaughlin, according to Dan Murphy, who is the personnel department, I think Dan's in the personnel department. If I got that wrong, Dan, I'm sorry. He joins Phil Dawson, who did it twice in 2011 and 2012, as the only Browns kickers to make at least 2 field goals of 50-plus yards in a single game. That's a great stat. The second great stat on a kick that I was like, whoa, Stefanski's trotting McLaughlin out for this? Again, I thought McLaughlin had a better leg than Parkey. I noted it earlier in the year, but 57 is a haul.
It's a long way, man.
In First Energy Stadium, that's a boomer. And he drilled it. That is the third longest in team history, and was the longest since Steve Cox connected from 60 yards in the 1984 season. So it was also the longest field goal by a Browns kicker at First Energy Stadium, obviously post-1999, where that's been a different element of kicking. So listen, man, 4 for 4, all of the extra points go through the uprights. Chase McLaughlin, I think he might have put together one of the single best kicking performance at First Energy Stadium we might have ever seen.
For the Browns, sure. Justin Tucker, who had another all-timer today, has probably had several games better than that. For the Browns,
I'm probably omitting a Phil game too, Steve. I'm probably omitting like a game where Phil had 7 field goals.
I think for me, it's the 2 field goals that he made, including I think it was a 50-plus yarder in the snow against Buffalo in that 8-0. Yeah. Those were 2 of the greatest kicks I've ever seen in the NFL when you take into the conditions into account. But yeah, I mean, and I said this, I said this on the Twitch show. Not only did he go out there and drill everything, everything was basically right down the middle. There was no grazing of the uprights, you know, Cody Parkey style. I'm not picking on Cody. I actually really liked Cody, but there was none of that sweating as the ball's in the air. And he looked cool. He looked calm. He looked, like you said, 57 yards. And people get conditioned to it because NFL kickers are so good anymore. They're like, 57 yard, whatever. You have no idea how hard that is. It's so far. And if you're off by a micro millimeter on your angle at impact, 57 yards from away, it has a huge difference. So to do that in anywhere in the NFL, but especially at First Energy Stadium, it is incredible. And like you said, it was kind of shocking. I thought for sure they were going to go for it. I mean, that's their tendency. That's the analytical approach. When you're between the 35 and the 45, you go for it. That's what you do. I thought for sure they were. And when Kevin sent him out there, he just went, okay, coach, I got this. You know, get the kickoff team ready. We got 3 coming on the board. It was just no sweat, no, you know, joyous jumping up and down. Oh, my God, I made it. None of that kind of just – okay, this is my job. I'm going to go put this ball through the uprights. And while we're talking about specialists here, just real quick, another total return yardage. Browns had 103 return yards. The Bears had 4 total. And that speaks to Demetrius Felton. I tweeted this out today. He came close to breaking a couple. He didn't break any. And people are like, eight-yard punt return. Oh, 12-yard punt return. Whatever. It doesn't. No, that does matter. The difference between an 8-yard, 12-yard, 7-yard punt return and a fair catch or, you know, a guy who gets tackled after a yard or something like that, man, that it really changes the trajectory of the drive, which changes the trajectory of the game, and it adds up over time. You know as well as I do, and most of the people listening are informed fans as well, you guys know the difference of 5 to 7 to 10 yards of field position on a consistent basis is huge. It makes it such a difference, especially as it adds up over and over and over. So if he can give us, even if he doesn't break any, let's say he never breaks, well, I think he will, but let's say he never does, but he's consistently giving us 6 to 10 yards of field position for the next 5 years. We haven't had something like that since Josh Cribbs. It makes a tremendous difference in the game, and it certainly did today on a day when the offense, for most of the first part of the first half, was really not firing on all cylinders. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, that's the difference between 3 extra plays on a drive, right? You know, take 3 plays to get a first down. Yep. That's 3 less opportunities to screw something up. It definitely matters. So, yeah, great point. I thought Felton's got that. We talked about it earlier in the year. Steve's got the phone booth wiggle, right? Guys, if you put him in a phone booth together, he'll still find a way to make you miss. So he was impressive. He got an opportunity to catch a ball on a wheel route up the left sideline that would have been a real big play on that first drive. Big just missed him. But, yeah, like listen, Felton belongs. And he's going to impact multiple phases of the game. My data collection counts him as a wide receiver at this point. He's really not getting running back snaps. I think most places are counting him as a wide receiver. So, he's an effective guy who can step in and replace some of the – they're doing a committee approach to replacing Jarvis while Jarvis is out. But even if he's just returning punts and he's returning punts, he catches the ball really well. Which is, you know, the first thing you need is the guy that secures the football. We've gone through phases of not feeling good about the guy catching the dang thing, first of all. Shout out Jabril Peppers. And then, you know, making a couple people miss and gaining 10 yards is a huge thing. So couldn't be more with you on Felton. We'll switch over. We got 2 more good stats here for you. 39 minutes and 34 seconds of Browns possession to 20 minutes and 26 seconds for the Bears, as dominating a performance as you could possibly get on the defensive side. Like we said, the 47 net yards, the 9 sacks stand out. Myles Garrett, 4.5 for 24 yards of loss. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah on a little green dog blitz action where he noticed his guy was staying in. Running back stays in. He says, all right, screw it, I'm going to blitz. And he gets a half a sack. He split that with Miles early. Clowney gets 2 sacks. Ronnie Harrison gets a sack off of a boot action where he's just kind of sitting there waiting on him. You get a half sack from Jackson and Tack, and you have a 9 sack day, the most for the Browns I think the most in the NFL since 2015 in a single game, and the most for the Browns. I know Fred threw that out in the post-game Twitch. I cannot remember the most for the Browns since there was a certain year, but it's been a long time. And some other next-gen stats for you, Steve. You ready? Fields was pressured on 55.2% of his dropbacks, tied for the fourth highest pressure rate by any team in a game since last year. Myles Garrett, 7 quarterback sacks on 25 rushes, 28% pressure rate. Jadeveon Clowney, 8 quarterback pressures on 25 pressure pass rushes, 32% of snaps there. And that was something that Joe Woods talked about, and you heard him talk to the broadcast group about it, and Greg Olsen, who I thought did a nice job. Greg Olsen mentioned, hey man, we're winning pass rush reps. We're winning. We're getting pressure. We're not converting them. Today, they converted them, and that's what you get, 9 sacks in a game.
Yeah, and I think it was a combination of a few things. One, like we said on the pregame, they were flat last week. They were not going to come out flat this week, and that can have a tremendous impact when you're talking about a league like the NFL where most plays are decided by 0.2 of a second and 1.5 inches. I mean, like you said, we've all seen the numbers. They've been knocking guys off their spot. They've been getting after the quarterback. They just, haven't been finishing it off. And part of that was due to, the quarterbacks that they played, and also due to the fact they were playing so passive, as you noted repeatedly this past week, in the secondary, in the second and third level of the defense. I thought, and we'll have to wait for the All-22, obviously, and your breakdown, but it felt like one of the other factors was they were up closer. I don't know if they were jamming people at the line and sticking to them and really playing, press man, but they were definitely closer to a lot of the receivers. And also, obviously, Justin Fields is a rookie. Rookies, for the most part, hold the ball longer than they should because they're used to having more time in college. That doesn't happen in the NFL. So, sure, it was a combination of things. But when you have a rookie quarterback, a leaky offensive line, and the talent that the Browns have on defense, this is the way it should look. I saw a few people on social media say things, try to put it in a negative light, like the Bears OL is bad, so let's not get too excited. Or, I'm paraphrasing, something in that, like the fact that they had 9 sacks should be, swept away. It's not that big of a deal. Well, if they're that bad and he's a rookie and all that other stuff, this is what should happen. So why is that a bad thing? I mean, if they went out and had, 2 pressures and no sacks today against a leaky offensive line and a quarterback who holds the ball too long, then you got a problem. But they went out and did what they were supposed to do against an offensive front wall that has not played particularly well so far and certainly didn't play well today. So, they did their job, and I don't think we can discount, too, and I think you're probably going to get to this, if not here on this show, you're definitely going to get to it in your film work this week, is that they trust JOK more. He was out on the field, I don't know the snap counts, but a lot. He was out there a lot today. Grant Delpit was out there a lot today. Greg Newsom, before he left with his calf injury, and let's hope that's not too serious, he, of course, played just as well as he had the first 2 weeks. And when you inject 3 guys like that with that kind of speed, we talked about it all offseason, who can do so much, they can do so many things, and so quickly, it allows the rest of the defense to really hone in on specific roles and specific things that they can do in the secondary and for the defensive line as well. And so just their mere presence, just getting everyone healthy and up to speed and all the stuff that we've been talking about, it makes such a difference. It's kind of similar to what the return of Odell did for the offense, just having him there. Even if he wasn't 100%, he only had, 70-something yards. It was a good return for him, but he didn't, have a highlight reel kind of day. But his mere presence opened up a lot of other things for the other offensive weapons. And those guys on the defense do the same thing. When you have a guy like JOK who can – he did it at least 3 or 4 times. He broke on the ball in pass coverage and either knocked it away or immediately tackled the guy. The guy caught it and went right to the ground. When you have that – on the second level of your defense, instead of watching Kelsey and Mark Andrews run wide open after the catch like that, it makes such a difference. And it gives your defensive line more confidence that they have a few extra, maybe not a few extra seconds, but a few more tenths of a second to get there. And that's what ended up happening today. I think it was a cohesive, complete effort from the defense. I don't know if they did a lot tremendously different, but they definitely executed it better. And ultimately, that, even though it's coach speak, that's what ends up mattering in the NFL.
Well said, all of it. I think we're going to have to look. We don't get the view. We just don't get the view to know that the TV view sucks so bad that we don't
for
know
the
if
secondary
they were,
especially, yeah,
to,
right?
To yeah. know. Well, we get all the O-line and D-line. They zoom in on that crap. Well,
right.
It's not crap. It's good stuff. But we just, you need the full picture. You need the full picture. So
right.
I don't want to sit here and say, and we've had a lot of people ask, like, Joe Woods, totally change it up. Look, I told you so. Chest thump. Boom. Love it. He's better. Like, I don't think he did that much different. I just think that they covered well. They played a more aggressive approach in coverage, which is what we're asking for. I don't think they blitz like crazy. I don't recall a ton of blitzing. We'll see what it looks like, but I don't recall a ton of blitzing. And I think they just, this is, when we talked about all offseason, Steve, about the, they're going to finally have this marriage between better coverage and better pass rush. This is the unison of all that, right? This is what the end byproduct looks like. It will not equal 47 total yards from every team the rest of the year. They are going to have leaky games, but when they play teams that they should thump and they put this on tape, like, this is exactly what we thought it could look like. So they have games coming up that they can take advantage. It's exciting to see. And this is what, this is the hope. The hope everybody thought was out there, this is what it looked like. You could tell, I could tell two series in, Steve, that I was like, listen, man, get to 13 points, 14 points, you're going to win. They're not moving the ball on this team. They're just not.
Right.
You could tell that they were overwhelmed. The defense was pretty ticked off from a week of people talking about how they were the problem when they gave up 21 points. Like, you could just, you could tell. There was a different level of passion, energy, aggression that showed up. I think we saw them do some things in coverage I liked a bit more, which was finding people instead of finding grass. You're right about JOK. I don't know the snap count number for him. Some guy from PFF has not tweeted that out yet. We'll get it in the morning. But it seemed like they played him a lot more, which does speak to the trust, and not for no reason. Like, he had four tackles, but I would imagine we're going to watch it. And he was impacting way more. I think he had a couple pass breakups. Like, we talked about that half sack. He was a guy where you're like, okay, that 28, that dude keeps popping up. Now I know why we were excited to get him. And that's the stuff you love to see, man. I thought on the defensive side, the pass rush stood out for obvious reasons, but I really thought they got strong linebacker play today too. And I felt bad John Johnson missed out on that interception, because he seemed to be everywhere they needed him to be too.
Yeah, I thought everybody did their job. And I know people are, I don't know if tired of hearing it or whatever, because it, you know, coach cliches become cliches for a reason. You say things over and over and over in press conferences because they're true. You know, I mean, we say it all the time. People say, oh, well, you know, the end, games in the NFL hinge on four or five plays. Games in the NFL change on an inch and a half or two tenths of a second. But then they can't follow through with saying, well, they just didn't execute. They don't believe that third part. That ties into it, right? I mean, if you execute, that inch and a half and that two tenths of a second falls your way more often than not. That's what it's all about. If you do your, now there are there times where the plan is wrong and the scheme is bad and it doesn't fit the opponent or it doesn't fit the players that you have on your, yeah, of course there are. We've seen it many, many times over the past 20 years here in Cleveland, before the last couple of years with this current team being built. But most of the time, the difference in talent is not that great. The difference in execution is what it comes down to. And I think you're right. We're going to have to wait and see. And maybe we're wrong. Maybe he changed it up and they went exotic. Who knows? You know, who knows what they will actually find out when you dig into the film. But I think what we're going to find is they just did their job a little bit quicker today. They did their job more crisp, more clean. They broke on the ball a half step quicker. They stuck to their guy a half step closer. Again, I've said it 1,000 times this week. They were flat last week. And when you're flat, you're half a step late. That's the natural human condition when your emotion isn't there. Today, from the jump, they were not flat. Even the offense, when they were not finishing plays, finishing drives in the first half. But that was, again, that was like, it wasn't like they weren't into it. Like you said, they were bored last week. I didn't get that feeling today. They were just making mistakes at the wrong time. And Baker missed some open guys. And, you know, half their offensive line was sort of hobbling around. There was a lot of reasons, but I don't think it was because they were flat. And on the defensive side, the fact that they were not flat, I think, played a huge part in them being half a step quicker, half a step closer. And that's the difference in the NFL, especially, like everyone keeps saying, when you're playing a team that you should beat on paper like they were today.
Again, spot on. I will have more data metric stuff by the end of the night. I will share with you on comprehensive breakdowns on both sides, how much they played dime, nickel, how much on offense they went 13, 12 personnel and 11. Those were their most popular. We'll talk about how many times they used motion. We'll go through all that stuff. We should probably, as we kind of wrap up our initial thoughts, and we're going to have so much more throughout the week. You know that with what we do at the OBR. We will have a Monday rewind where we'll get all the data from Pro Football Focus tomorrow and some of the other things from Steve and I rewatching it. We'll be back with you tomorrow. We'll talk about it. We'll have some all 22 look by that time, so we'll be able to give you more feedback. Tuesday, we'll go deep dive on Baker, look at all 31 attempts. I think he had like upwards of 36 dropbacks. We'll look at every single one of them that is non-screen related. And then on Wednesday, I should have said Wednesday's Chalk Talk too. We'll do O-line play with Kyle Murphy as we do, and then we'll do our defense with John Stephenson. So you can get all the answers you want. So, you know, that's what we try to pride ourselves on around here, is giving you all those answers for why things went the way they went. We'll do that. We got to talk about some specific players, Steve, and probably gush about them, because today's the day where you gush about the team. You know, they were dominating. They ran for 101 yards in the fourth quarter, which changed the game, right? It was, I think the score was only 13-6 when you got into the fourth quarter, and they go on this long drive. Two drives that we need to talk about. The drive before half, that was grown man football. Huge drive where you can bury everything that happened in the first half. And they were frustrated. They two fourth down and shorts on the Chicago side of the field. They were pissed, as they should have been. They let those drives slip away. But again, I said, you score here and you bury all of it. Again, Donovan Peoples-Jones, man, the guy's ability to track the football along the sidelines, that third down catch when Baker just kind of puts it out there for him, that, I mean, I can't say enough about how well he handles those plays. He's going to keep growing, but as far as an X that you can push him up the sideline and let him go get the football a little bit, I feel really good about him.
Yeah, I actually picked that play as my play of the game in our, yeah. We have an article we put out for those of you who are listening, 3 stars and the play of the game, and the OBR staff picks their three favorite, not their favorite, but you know, who they thought were 3 standout players, and then one play that they thought turned the tide or made a big difference or whatever. And obviously today, a lot of people pick Miles and Kareem Hunt, and yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, Miles had, 3 dozen sacks, I think. So, but as far as the play of the game, we've mentioned it several times here. I'm sure we're not the only ones who have done this, but they just didn't finish drive. They had 4 opportunities to put points on the board, 4 drives on the Chicago side of the field, and had, I think, 3 points, just the 57-yard field goal with, what, a minute and a half? It was after the 2-minute warning, and they were deep in their own end. And you could – how many times has a Cleveland Browns team been in that position? You go 3 and out. Then either there's a shanked punt or you give up a 12-yard return. The other team gets in field goal range, or you give up a touchdown, and then you're losing at half in a game that you have basically dominated. And you could just feel it in the stadium, that OIC stuff starting to creep in the back of everybody's head. Oh, my God, at least get a first down here. At least get out of the half tied, you know. And then he makes that huge play. And let's not underthrow the sell either. Or, I'm sorry, undersell the throw. It was a wonderful back shoulder throw. It was really – Baker missed a lot of throws today, but that was one was pinpoint. But what a turnaround, not only secure the ball, get the feet down, get out of bounds – it gave them breathing room. It let them know that they were basically going to have the last drive of the half. And now they could get more aggressive on first and second down, because you're in a position where if the next series you end up, or the next set of 3 downs, you end up punting, you're not punting from your own end zone. So it gave them such a momentum shift. It gave them such a change in attitude, and Kevin got aggressive and the team got aggressive and the stadium erupted. It was a huge swing that'll probably get lost in all the other big plays of the day. Kareem's 29-yard touchdown run probably going to end up being the play of the day, really. But I thought in the moment, with the frustration, like you mentioned, mounting at the time, it was a massive play to get them out from under the shadow of their own goalpost. And he may not end up with 800, 900, 1,000 yards. He may not end up with 75 catches, but that guy's going to make some catches this year, as he already has done and he did last year, that are crucial at critical points of the game. One, because he's going to get the opportunity, because in critical points, guys like Odell and David Njoku are going to draw the tougher coverage and all that kind of stuff. And two, he's just really good we're going to look back in a couple years, and the rest of the league is going to know what we already know in Cleveland. Him slipping to the sixth round was an absolute crime. This guy has the skill set to do what not a lot of other wide receivers in this league can do, and he did it on that play at a critical time and really helped his team propel his team towards a win.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, he's been winning sideline vertical routes. You hope he keeps expanding that and becomes a more all-around player. I think it's there. He's a guy that, you know, through the duration of his rookie contract, has a real chance to be a difference maker. And again, just like Demetric Felton, a sixth-round pick. You know, him and Nico Collins, I think Nico Collins for Houston is going to be really good, man. And you're going to look back on those Michigan days and be like, those guys were on the same team? And they did what? Right. Yeah, so anyway, we also would be remiss if we didn't talk about Odell's first game back. I mentioned pregame 20 to 50 snaps. According to Pro Football Focus tweet, he was at 51 for the day. Now, a large part of that is the Browns are on the field a ton. They opened the game. Remember, as I said in the pregame, well, they probably won't use him during 13 personnel plays because it gives them a break. Well, what do? They come out the first two plays as 13 personnel, and he's on the field. He's the wide receiver. It's like a kiss of death. But anyway, he was good. He looked comfortable. He talked about post-game. He, you know, his legs weren't under him. The emotion got to him more than he thought it would. But it's the first step in a long recovery that this guy's had. First step in the actual getting back on the football field. And, man, a couple of plays along the sideline where the ball was just a little more inbounds gave him a shot. He would have ended up with more, but 9 targets. You love targeting your best receiver 9 times. You gave him 5 catches, 77 yards. And I'm encouraged, Steve. He looks like the wide receiver 1 that they really need.
Yeah. I mean, that's been the question this whole time, right? When Odell comes back, is he going to be Odell? Is he going to be that guy from the highlight reels, you know, that we all remember, or is he going to be, I mean, he's been injured since he's been here. It's not a knock against the guy. It's just the way it is. He played 2019 with a torn groin last year. He was a lot better than a lot of people think last year before he got injured, but a serious ACL injury. And for a guy at his position, that's not an insignificant injury. So I think he was probably, 95%, 90%, 95%. And, you know, his game conditioning, which, as you said, he noted in his post-game comments, it's going to take a little bit of time for him to come back and be 100%. Plus, he's got to trust the knee. I mean, no matter how much the doctors tell you you're fine, you got to get hit a few times. That's just the way it is, you know, and before you stop thinking about it. For your first game back, when you're not 100%, you haven't practiced, you haven't had any live game reps, and you know they work together a ton, they did, but when you get between the white lines, that's the only time it really counts. To go, like you said, 9 targets, 5 catches, 77 yards, 15.4 average, and could have been more than that, like you said, if a couple balls were placed just a little better. Other than maybe breaking one or catching a touchdown pass, I'm not sure what more you could have asked for from 13 in his first game back, because not only did, like we said a couple of times, not only did he create opportunities and space for himself, I absolutely 100% believe part of Kareem Hunt's big receiving day, part of these other guys' big receiving days underneath, was due to the fact that 13 was out there and they were shading safeties towards him. You could see it a couple times on the replays. We'll have to wait and see exactly, but they were committing resources his way, as we have talked about all offseason, and that opened up things for other guys.
Sure did. He was everything I was hoping he could be in his first game back, and the snap count numbers were good. And it's too nice to hear himself reflect and say, I got a long way to go, right? You know, he's got to He's got to get his legs under him, get his wind back. Game reps matter, right? You can't really replicate those in practice. They talk about game speed all the time. And he, you know, the enthusiasm, the energy, the emotion from Odell and hearing him in the place he's in personally and all of that's great. It's just really cool. And hopefully he continues on this path and they reach levels that they reached last year. And he has a chance on the brightest of stages to make a play. And I think that him and Baker will grow more comfortable. I thought I saw some very encouraging signs. I did not feel like they forced him the ball very often. There was one throw where I thought it felt forced, the ball Jalen Johnson got his hand on the right sideline. But for the most part, it felt very flow of the game. He was a slot guy. He was an outside guy. He was a motion guy. I liked it. I liked it all. So we'll close with Kareem Hunt. I would say, Steve, this was his best collective game as a Cleveland Brown, impacting both phases and really the guy we remembered from Kansas City. And I think Kareem's been great. This is not to harken back to times he was not as a member of the Cleveland Browns, but when he was with KC, he was getting more league-wide praise, right? Like he was getting more rushing title winner, all of that. He's overshadowed by Nick, and justifiably so in Cleveland because Nick is an unbelievable football player. But 10 rushes for 81 yards, highly efficient rushing today, eight yard per carry numbers, 29-yard touchdown, making two people miss, one at the point of attack, one downfield to take it from an 11-yard run to a 29-yard touchdown. Also being an active part, a huge part of the target share today with 7 targets, 6 catches, 74 yards. I continue to say if they use him in the passing game like this, it has a chance to change the trajectory of Baker Mayfield's career to get him more cognizant of checking down and letting guys like 27 finish plays for him, make his life easier. This was the Kareem Hunt, like, oh yeah, this guy's as elite as we should be talking about him game. At least that's what I thought. I'm curious your end of it too.
Yeah, 155 total yards on a day when, and I said something about this on the Twitch show, and somebody said, oh, like I was cutting Nick Chubb down or something like that. All I said was Nick wasn't the dominant Nick that we know and expect. And, you know, maybe that's on us as fans. We just expect him to be superhuman every single. He was fine today, 22 carries, 84 yards. But for Nick Chubb, is 22 carries, 84 yards the norm? No, I don't think I'm out of line in saying that he was not the Nick that we all expect today. He was fine, but he wasn't superhuman. And in that, stepping into that, I don't know if vacuum is the right word, but stepping in and picking up that slack was 27, 155 total yards. And he has this knack. We talked about it on the Twitch show. He's one of those guys that always falls forward. So wherever he gets hit, you're going to get another yard. And then he also has this weird thing, and I'm not the only one who's noticed this. He has this strange ability to fall on top of the guy that's tackling him and then roll forward for even another 3/4 yard. He does it so often.
He's a unique faller. I don't know what other way to say it. He really
is. It's weird. And like, I don't know if he does it on purpose. Like if it's a skill that you acquire and he works on it. I don't know, but it happens so frequently that I'm like, okay, this is getting weird. You know, I mean, I enjoy it as a Browns fan, but he does it a lot. And so I'll close with this, and I don't want to start, you know, because, you know, contract situations and do you pay it running back is just an exhausting topic, especially in Browns Twitter. But we have all sort of assumed that this was it for Kareem Hunt in Cleveland at $6 million with Nick Chubb signing his new contract, all the other contracts they have to figure out a way to do or not do, all the extensions and everything. We know all of this stuff. We have just sort of assumed they're not going to trade him, so stop that. But we had all sort of assumed in the back of our head that this was probably his last year for several reasons. One, they're probably not going to commit that much money to him. And two, he probably wants to go to a place where he's the feature guy again. He wants to, and he's trying to prove that he still has that in him. We might have to rethink that if this keeps up. You know, I mean, I don't know how you make the contract work with paying two solid running backs. I don't know. But if there's a guy who can figure out a way to do it, it would be Andrew Berry. And maybe he, you know, sees and goes around and finds he's not going to get that Le'Veon Bell contract. He's not going to get that Zeke contract. He's not going to. So he can get, you know, I don't know what, $2 million more to go play for, you know, whoever that might be lucky to be 500, or he can stay here for another six. Let's say they re-up him at the same time, that's what they work out. It's another $6 million. and he can come here, have half the workload, extend his career by another 3 or 4 years, and compete for a championship, he may decide that this is where he wants to be. I don't know. We may have to rethink that if his production and his usage continues like this. Now, it's only a third week of the season. 14 games from now, we may go, you know what? No, there's just no way to keep him. But if this keeps up, if he has half a dozen more games where he's the guy like this, we may have to rethink that by the time next offseason rolls around.
Yeah, you just have to skip some costs other places, right? You can find ways to finagle money. Again, there'll be capologists who jump down our throat. We're not doing that right now. I don't really care. And right. If you come at me with it, I'll just ignore you. But it's he's one of their best football players. So, again, you can find ways to keep your best football players. And I don't think we're talking enough about how these two can extend each other's careers. It's right. Not getting enough write-up because – the reason they love the two of them together is because they don't have to Derrick Henry, Nick Chubb every year. There's a genuine balance that can help these guys extend their career. So, and this is what they want to do, Steve, as we wrap the bow on this thing. The fourth quarter, 18 rushes, 101 yards from Kareem, right. 6 for 50 and a touchdown, Nick 7 for 42. And then, you close it that way with 101 yards. Baker gets a play action to Harrison Bryant that could have been a touchdown. So Baker right. could have been, instead of 1 of 3 for 15, he could have been 2 of 3 for, 45 yards and a touchdown. And that's just who they want to be. The body blows method, right? The Bears are good defensively. I really think they are. They have a great, they're boxed in terms of their edge guys, middle guys, and they're missing Eddie Goldman, which mattered. But they played the Browns well. They held the duo to 68 yards through three quarters. That's a real right. challenge, and they did it. But that's the body blow method, right? Where we just, say, screw it. And I know the Bears might have been beat down by how bad their offense was playing, who went for negative 17 yards in the fourth quarter on 1 of 8 throwing. I get it. But their punishing people in the end of games is like the Cleveland Browns recipe that they want to follow. And 101 yep. and a quarter on the ground at the NFL level is spectacular. And again, Baker is just a tick far on that ball to Bryant, and you put up 30 plus again. It's I didn't think they played well offensively for four quarters. I just thought they put it together at the end a little bit, but they didn't play that well up front. They didn't play that well at the quarterback position. We'll talk more about Baker. He was good enough. He was fine. We continued. My goals for Baker are not good enough. I want Baker to be elite. So I always give you the frame of perspective. Here's how he gets to elite. And he would tell you, and I know he did already in the postgame comments, I missed a couple throws I should have made, and he would have gone for 350 again. So everything the Browns want is right in front of them. They're 2-1. They won another game in dominating fashion, a double-digit win. They got, real opportunity in Minnesota next week to go out and get another W and then go into a game and stretch against a couple of really good quarterbacks. In LA with the Chargers, and then in Arizona when Arizona comes to visit Cleveland, and then you get that Thursday night primetime game against what's shaping up to be a pretty good Broncos team. So important stretch coming. I feel really good about the Cleveland Browns right now, that they haven't played their best football yet at all, and they're winning football games, could easily be 3-0. The right track, Steve. Very talented team. We'll hope Greg Newsom injury news comes back on the minimal side of that, but for the most part, although the Baltimore thing took it away from being a perfect day, a great day of football.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how some people are just unhappy. I don't know how. Are there things to work on? Yeah. Can they get better? Yeah. It's only the third week. Every team can get better. Championship teams are rarely playing at championship level week three. That's just the natural progression of any organization is like that. So could they have won today by 30? Yeah. Should they have won today by 30? Probably. If they finish off a few of those drives in the first half, I think it's a completely different final score. Should they be 3-0? I think they absolutely should be 3-0. But they're 2-1, man, and they're leading the division, which, as we have said, is the most important thing. They have proven to themselves and to everybody else that they can slug it out with the best of the best in the AFC in their yard, and then they proved they can win a game when they don't have their fastball. And today they proved they can win a game when they shoot themselves repeatedly in the foot on offense in the first half and win it by 20 points. So they're a team with enough talent on both sides of the ball that the other teams have to be perfect to beat the Browns. The other teams have to play their A game to beat the Browns. And I think that is the biggest overarching point that we as fans need to take away from this first triumvirate of games. Yes, there's things to get to work on. Yes, they still need to get healthy. They got guys out. They're going to be critical pieces. Jarvis Landry's out. Jedrick Wills is hobbling. We don't know about Greg Newsome. Anthony Walker is still out for a few more. I mean, they still haven't even had their full contingent out there yet, and they're still winning games that they should win and winning them by comfortable margins. So after the Chiefs game, what we said was, if they take these next three that they should, then they go in a couple of tough games, if they can split those. Yeah, I mean, you're looking at going into the Ravens game at a minimum of 8-3, I think, barring some sort of catastrophic injury. If you can get to 9-2, that's, I think, where you should be. I don't think 10-1 is out of the question, but that's a tough thing to ask for a team to win 10 games in a row in the NFL. It's just hard. So while we want to focus on the negatives a lot, we want, especially in film breakdown, because the film breakdown shows you where things went wrong, I think what we should focus on is the general overarching point that, for the most part, things are going right, and they're winning games. And this is a critical point for Browns fans to understand, because it's hard for a lot of us to grasp this point. We're allowed to be happy. It's okay. You're allowed to just enjoy a victory Sunday and a victory Monday. Tuesday, okay, take off your fan hat and put your analyst hat back on and start digging in and look at the point places where they can get better and what they need to do if they go up against a better offensive line and all that kind of stuff. That's absolutely, I'm not saying not do that. I'm just saying let yourself be happy for 36 hours. It's okay to do it, especially when your team just won a game by 20 freaking points. Be happy.
They're good, Steve. We keep saying it. They're good. We'll see just how good they are. But I can tell you right now, they're damn good. So last little nugget here to talk about your Demetric Felton stat. Andrew Gribble, Browns reporter. Felton had 103 punt return yards today, Steve. The Browns had 115 total for all of last year. That's pretty good. Not to mention the penalties that wiped out a couple of other ones. So, yeah, six-round magic from Andrew Berry. This was fun, Steve. As usual, my friend, thank you for joining me. I appreciate your time.
Anytime, especially on a victory Sunday.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us today, and hopefully you enjoy your Sunday, Monday, whenever you listen to this podcast. Browns wins are getting to be a thing that we're getting used to, but you can never take them for granted, so enjoy it. Have a great day. Check out our Monday Rewind, our Tuesday Not the Same Old Browns, and Wednesday Chalk Talks that are coming up. Plenty of coverage of just how this win went down, everything behind it. We will cover it like no other site will. As usual, check out the 3 Stars article. Fred Greetham's angle is up as well, so check that out too. Have a great Sunday or Monday. Again, whenever you listen to this, victory version. And as usual, go Browns.